Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Kaboom!
To take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is February the... Sorry.
15th, man. Day after Valentine's Day.
It's February the 15th, 2013. That's for your wife. Our topic for today is going to be an article, a really good article we found on the 15 tips for raising kids with a positive body image. That's right. Today we're going to talk a smidge about body image in kids, and we're growing up in an age where there is an emphasis, especially for ladies, I think, on body image, size, weight, everything that you're supposed to look like. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. How do you work with your kids? How do you teach them healthy things with that? I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Jeff. Jeff, how are you today, sir?
I'm well. Happy belated Valentine's Day to you, Trey. By the time this airs, I will have traveled to Albuquerque and back in the space of 48 hours. We're getting ready to take a little trip. And although that sounds like a lot of driving and torture, I'm actually really excited about it because it means that I get to spend some quality time with the wifey.
Ooh, I love it.
It has been a long time since we've been able to just kind of go somewhere. The kids are staying with Nana and Papa, and so we're going to just be in the car and be able to talk and connect. And even though it's a long trip there and back, we're looking forward to it. So this is kind of our kind of a Valentine's Day trip. I don't know. There's nothing super romantic about it except getting to spend time together. That's worth it. So,
you know, there's a piece of wisdom that my father-in-law left me. I think I've said it on the show before, but the one piece of advice that was really pretty insightful was he said, if you ever want to know if you can stay married to a person, he said, get into a trip that's going to last over 4 hours with them in a car by themselves, and then you'll know. And but you know, I connect with what you're saying. My wife and I covet our driving time. I don't mind driving. My wife hates driving. But the reality is that we actually both kind of look forward to it because it's that one period of time where it's unadulterated. We're in the car. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to clean. No, we set our phones down and we focus on each other and we get some of the best talk times in on driving. So I love driving.
Indeed. Me too. So anyhow, but maybe we'll find some time to take another little trip and I can download, a Real Family Guys podcast and pop it in.
Hey-o.
Yeah, you know it.
So here's the other thing that's going to be going on. By the time you guys are listening to this, I will officially be in my 30s.
Woo, that's right. We got a birthday coming up.
Yeah, that's right. 3-0, man. Can you believe that?
I can. I mean, I've seen you. And
wait a minute.
No, I'm just kidding.
What does that mean, Jeffrey?
You're holding up well for a 30-year-old.
Jeffrey David Emery? Jeffrey? No. I tell you, somebody asked me the other day, said, do you feel any different now that you're 30 or whatever? Do you feel old? I really don't. But, you know, we men kind of have it lucky. I mean, we're kind of typically, we garnish more respect as we get older in a lot of cases, which women seem to have, in many cases, the absolute opposite. You guys kind of get the stink in on that. And which, again, I think this is another good segue to what we're going to talk about today. But ladies are typically expected to stay young, to stay looking young, and y'all's body image is such a big deal, which is exactly what we're going to actually talk about.
That's a great segue.
Hey,
yeah.
I didn't even plan that, guys, but look how it rolls. That's how Jeff and I do this, man.
That's right. We shoot from the hip and just take it as it goes.
So we're going to talk a little bit today about how do we raise our kids with a positive body image? Because let's be honest. I mean, our kids, never more than ever. I don't even know if that's a real phrase, but we're going to roll with it, guys. Never more than ever, never more than now, do we have a society that sits in front of what? It's a TV.
In front of the TV, absolutely. And those visual images just bombard us. And the stuff we see, we can't unsee. And so
that's good.
The purpose of advertising, the purpose of putting people up in front of you is because that's – it creates a standard by which our society kind of says what is and what isn't pleasurable and beautiful to look at, and so it's a really tough thing for us as parents to be able to kind of balance out what the media is trying to drive into our kids' heads about what is beautiful and what's not, and really what's healthy and what's not, and so those are some of the issues that we're going to get into today. Trey, earlier you were asking, why this kind of jumped out at me, and so I'm going to go ahead and share if it's okay.
Great story.
Yeah, my sweet daughter, my youngest daughter Eleanor, has over the past couple of years she's been in ballet,
and how old is she again?
I'm sorry?
How old is she again?
Well, when I first started noticing this, she was about seven. So she's coming up on eight. So it's been a little bit over a year that I first remember her saying this to me. But we were coming home from ballet one day, and of course she's, you know, in her little leotard and tights and her hair up in a bun and just looking every bit the little princess ballerina that you might imagine. And she's tiny, she's skinny, and she just has joy just shines out of her face because she's that. That beautiful little girl. I am a little bit biased, but I've been told by other people.
I was about to say, let me confirm as a guy who has talked with her and played with her before that this is completely confirmed outside of the daddy eyes, the daddy filter.
Well, thank you. So, you know, I'm looking at my daughter and I'm just thinking she's perfect and beautiful and wonderful, and so I was dumbstruck. Which is a hard thing when you realize that I hardly ever stop talking. But she told me one day, she said, "Daddy, I'm fat." And hey, I was like, "You're what?" And not only that, but she went on to tell me that she didn't think she was very pretty. And well, I didn't know what to say because my knee-jerk response when my beautiful thin daughter tells me that she thinks she's fat and ugly. My knee jerk reaction was to tell her that she was wrong. No, you're not fat. And I think that's a natural response that when somebody says something that's so obviously not true, that we want to, you know, we want to say no, and you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit weird because then the therapist part of me kind of kicked in and as I'm sitting there, you know, assuring her that she's not, and even a little bit angry that she would think of herself that way. The therapist part of my mind kicked in and said, "Now, wait a minute, Jeff, if she's got this negative self-image where she's saying to herself that she's fat and that she's ugly, it probably goes beyond how she feels about her outward appearance. Also how she's seeing herself. And so if I sit there and I contradict her and say, no, you're wrong, there's probably an unspoken third thing that she's saying is that she's stupid, right? So that's the trifecta, the trifecta. I'm fat, I'm ugly, and I'm stupid. And so even though she didn't say that, I bet that it was somewhere in there. And here I am telling her that she's expressing a feeling to me and I want her to feel safe about opening up to me and that she can tell me anything. And yet I'm shutting her down by telling her that she's wrong. Instead of validating her feelings. So I'm kind of caught in this parental trap. How do I validate this negative self-talk because that's what she's feeling and yet challenge those things and help her to be able to do that for herself? Cause you know, I'm not always going to be around to tell her, that, you know, and boost her ego. So she needs to be able to do that for herself. And that's a skill. So when I saw this article, you know, 15 ways to help raise your kid with a positive body image. I was like, man, I want to take a look at that.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, Jeff, you're bringing up an absolutely brilliant point here because how many of us, I mean, the typical response that any parent, I think, would have, me too, I guarantee you that is what my response would have been up until we brought this up when we were writing the show notes for this earlier. It would have been, oh, no, you're not, baby. Oh, gosh, no. It probably would have been more passionate than that. I've been like, oh, baby, no, you're, you know, it just would have been the no, you aren't. But, I mean, seriously, when we really think about that, I mean, how well does that really work? I mean, how many times have you ever seen somebody tell them like that, you know, oh, baby, no, that's not. And then they really go, oh, okay, I guess you're right then. And then they stick with it, right? So obviously the solution doesn't lie. And again, I raised my hand to being that I would have done the same thing up until this point. Yeah. But it is not as something as simple as that. And I think you're bringing up such a brilliant point that we have to address how they are thinking. We've got to get them changing that. And I love how you stated that too, because it's one thing for us to try to fill their head with what we think, but the solution lies in getting them to come to that conclusion themselves. All of my successful therapy that I ever did, in the sense that I did it, mm-hmm. it always the most powerful ones that we ever, like the other powerful moments we ever had, were those ones where we got them there. I didn't have anything really to do except I kind of nudged them in the direction that they were wanting to go, and I helped them explore that, and then I helped them. They you know, they were wanting to know what the next step was. I didn't give it to them. We got them to the next step, and when they come to self-discovery and that self-realization, it's not me telling them what's the issue. When a person comes through that themselves, it's much better. And I think you're bringing up such a good point on that.
Well, the nice thing about this is that unlike therapy, where you only go and see your therapist or your counselor for an hour or so a week, parents have ton of influence on our kids. And so if we're aware of this, if we can do our part to be aware and to kind of position ourselves in a place where we can help our kids think better about themselves or to think healthier thoughts or have better thought patterns, we're actually in a really good place to be able to influence them even more than a therapist or a counselor could do. So, go ahead.
I've got a professor, and she's become one of my friends now. But her name is Dr. Shoemaker, and she really kind of specializes in stuff like this, especially for ladies. And anyway, she particularly talks about, it's called Operation Transformation is what she runs. But she talks about ladies' body image, and she brought up a good point probably about 4 or 5 months ago. But she said she was referencing I don't remember what she is, but there was a girl on the Disney Channel called Raven. She had a show called That's So Raven.
Sure.
And her name is actually Raven in real life. I can't remember what her last name is. But, she was always a bigger girl, and she lost a whole bunch of weight and just really trimmed up. And the next thing you know, the media is just oh, my gosh, you look so, they connected this word, you look so beautiful, with the fact that she was thin.
She was
right?
thin. Oh,
and
yeah.
And somebody got into an interview with her once, and they asked her, they said, how do you feel now? How do you feel about yourself now that you've lost this weight? And her answer was beautiful. She looked at that camera, and I don't know if I can – I wish I could have the exact quote in my hand right now to get it right. But she said, I thought I was all that before I did.
That's right.
And I was just like, boom, baby. That is
it. That's right.
Good
answer.
I thought that was such a beautiful answer. I thought I was all that before this. And I think that is so good that she is – at least she is making an active attempt to change that vernacular, that language that says, I have to connect how beautiful I am to how – thin I am, because that is one of the most destructive patterns that I've seen personally ever.
So how do our kids learn to language that stuff? I think you hit it on the head, is that it starts not with what we do, but how we think about certain words and how we approach things. And so as we start looking at these 15 tips for raising kids with a positive body image, I think following Raven Simone's mindset of thinking healthily about ourselves from the get-go is where it starts, because the first couple of these all kind of had the same, I guess, the same philosophy. Number one on this list, and once again, for those of you who are listening, if you have a chance to go to the website, to the Family Podcast Network website, and look at the show notes, there'll be a link to this blog that you can go and you can take a look at this stuff yourself. But number one is never use the word fat in a derogatory way. This is exactly what Trey was mentioning that was going on. The media was connecting beautiful with thin. And the converse of that is that fat is ugly or undesirable, right? And even though the media does that, it's not a healthy way to think of that, because I don't know about you, Trey. I have been before to see the doctor, and they have measured my BMI. You know what BMI is?
Body mass index.
That's right. That's right. And what it is, it's a ratio of the amount of fat that we have on our body versus the amount of muscle that we have, right? And there's all sorts of charts that are out there that tell you, depending on your age and your height and your weight, you should have a certain percentage of body fat. And they've got it all figured out on this index. But the truth of the matter is that those are just numbers.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's not a reflection, because it is possible to be higher on their body mass index, and even to show up as morbidly obese or obese, and yet still be healthy.
Yeah,
and so when we start using the word fat and the word thin, and we tie those to the values of being desirable or undesirable, we're doing our kids a disservice.
Yeah, that's good. I've got permission to share this about my wife, but my wife grew up in a household where there was an extremely high emphasis by her father on weight, and it went like this. If they were watching a TV show and there was a thin lady on there, she's a hot, beautiful lady, right? Mm-hmm. But if there was an obese, overweight lady on there, I mean, she was just an ugly, expletives and things like that. I mean, that was the nature of what she grew up with. And I get to see the after effects of this. And again, I have permission from my wife to share this with folks, but I get to see as she struggles with that to this very day. And she still struggles to disconnect those two, that if I am overweight. If I am fat, then I am ugly. I'm not pretty. And it's so funny when she'll look at pictures of herself when she's dressed up and just there's an authentic shock, and she'll be like, wow, I'm a really beautiful lady. But because that vernacular has been there for so long before she started even questioning the validity in that statement, she still struggles to see how gorgeous she is, how hot she is. And I mean, I've taken it on myself to reinforce that as much as we can. But the reality comes down to this, and sometimes it hurts me because, I'm trying to reinforce this in her, but she doesn't believe it. And so there's that part of me that's like, oh, she doesn't trust what I say.
Right.
So do you see how this ripples out, how just little things that we can do as a parent can ripple out well past them being in our house and even into their marriages, their friendships, their dating, whatever it is that they wind up doing as they grow up. The things that we do have a ripple effect.
That's right. That's right. And so that means that not only are we really powerful as parents and what we say kind of sticks in our kids' heads and our psyches, but it means that we need to be really responsible with that power, right?
Yeah, that's good.
So we talked about using fat in a derogatory way. Number two says, never imply that you can't do something or wear something because of your size.
Ooh, that's good.
Well, and I don't like absolute, so I don't like never and always, but I get the gist of this is that just because you're a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, doesn't mean that you can't necessarily do something. And I've seen people count themselves out of doing things, even like physical things like going rock climbing or things like
good.
That. Because they're like, oh, I couldn't do that. Or, you know, oh, I can't wear those clothes, not with these thighs or, you know, just something like that. And so, we need to be careful how we're talking about that. There may be legitimate reasons that we don't want to do something or that it'd be undesirable, but we don't need to tie it to our size.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And I think this is one of our biggest propensities to do something here. And again, hear us say there are exemptions to this. So for instance, do I need to wear a muscle shirt? Well, I mean, the spirit of this is saying that if you want to wear a muscle shirt, if you think muscle shirts are the coolest thing since sliced bread and you've always want to have, you know, had one, you would authentically feel better for you know, by wearing something like this, you know, then you do need to do it. Guys, I was not chuckling. So if any of you guys out there are overweight and were like, man, I'm going to put on a shirt, and Trey just laughed at me. Jeff just sent a comment over Facebook. Can I share it? Because it was really funny.
Dude, you're calling me out here.
Well,
go ahead.
We do go back with it. Jeff said no wife beater for you. So I'm not allowed to wear a wife beater, guys. But anyway,
that's right, because
but the only reason I expose you on that is because I didn't want anybody to think I just laughed at them. But that was really funny, by the way.
No,
the spirit behind this is that don't just let weight be something that guides you. Well, I can't do this because I am. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, anyway, why do I feel like I'm eating crow here, Jeff?
Well, I don't know. The next couple are kind of the same thing, so we can kind of buzz through the next.
This will help expand on this number two.
Right. Number three is never compliment others based on size. I mean, how often do you see somebody, especially if they've had a weight change, and you say something like, "Oh my goodness, you look so thin."
Yeah.
Once again, linguistically we're setting thin up to be the desirable quality.
Agreed.
Right. Now you can say you look beautiful. That's fine. It's okay for a person to look beautiful. But to tie it to being thin, now on the flip side, you know, Trey, how do you feel about if somebody has lost weight and it's their goal? Do you think it's okay to say, wow, you look smaller, or I mean, to acknowledge that they've lost that weight?
Absolutely.
I would say that
is absolutely good. I think the phrase is like, man, you were looking so healthy.
There
those
you
kinds
go.
Of phrases are good. See, that's what we do. We have, for the most part, removed the word fat. From because fat has such a negative background, especially in my wife's background, we've chosen to remove that from that. So we move to the man, you are looking so healthy, or focus on the things that they're doing, not where they are, because where you are in weight is transient. It can always be moving.
Sure.
It's not a static thing, and we want our kids to recognize that. Here's where you are right now, but you know what? That can change really easy. So we focus not on where they are in that moment. We focus on what they've been doing. Man, you've been working
that's
so
excellent.
Hard. Man, you have been busting your butt running around
on
this
effort.
House. Yeah, the other day when we went on a walk and you wanted to race me back to the house, you didn't stop the whole way. You know, that's we focus on the activities that they're doing to get the results they want, not where they are in any selective moment, because that is always able to be changed. And I'll tell you something else, Jeff. We have a rule in our house. We do not connect the word beautiful to physical. We use the word pretty. So a person can be very pretty, but let me tell you, some of the most pretty people that I ever had in my office Where some of just some of the they were just not pretty people. They were not beautiful people. Once you really got to visiting with them, they were often, and often they came with hurt and pain, and they were vindictive. But some of the nastiest looking people that I've met on the inside were just gorgeous on the outside. So we've actually removed in our household the idea of beautiful from the from physical. So
yeah.
I mean, I've also seen some people that we saw a lady the other day who had been in a very tragic car accident, and her face was very mangled, but you could see it in her eyes that she was caring, that she had processed and worked through that issue, you know, everything that had happened and the trauma psychologically and mentally, and she was just a beautiful lady, and she helped, and she, you know, even though she looked so very different from what she used to before the accident, she could make kids smile. Let me tell you, you could see that beauty in her. And it had nothing to do with that. And so we've removed those apart with pretty good success.
And you know, I think what you're talking about, Trey, is what the gist of this this blog post, this 15 point is about, is that as a family, we can be intentional about how we talk about beauty, so it doesn't have to be connected to physical appearance. And it's interesting that that we get to this point, and as you're saying this stuff, I actually ran across just the other day, I saw a quote by the author, Roald Dahl, the guy who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach and things like that. Right. And I like this quote so much that I actually wrote it down in a card and I gave it to my, to Eleanor yesterday. And the quote was this: "A person who has good thoughts cannot ever be ugly. You can have a wonky nose and a crooked mouth and a double chin and stick out teeth, but if you have good thoughts, they will shine out of your face like sunbeams, and you will always look lovely." So that's something that just kind of jumped out at me and touched me. And I think it's interesting how things in our everyday life all kind of, I don't know, they come in themes. And I've been thinking about that this week, and then I ran across that quote, and then you and I are doing this this podcast today. So anyhow, I just thought I'd bring that up because it's a lovely, lovely quote.
So this kind of segues us into number four, Jeff, which is point out the beauty of diversity in people and in nature. And see, I love this. And we live in kind of a culture that's gotten very, I mean, I don't know, what's the word, homogenous, I guess? I mean, I don't know.
Maybe, well, yeah.
Maybe that doesn't work real well. But, I mean, if you take a look at anything from the religions that we're in to the political parties that we have, I mean,
sure,
everybody has a tendency to go group around people that are like-minded and believe like them and see things like them. And we don't like outsiders that come in. We especially don't like things that question anything that we consider being the status quo. And we avoid them at all costs, right? And I think this one is so good because instead of people needing to look exactly the same to be a status quo, beautiful,
right,
attractive, handsome, pretty, right? Instead of it all having to be that we can see that, we begin to look at different people that see things differently. I spent some time in Africa and on a mission trip a few years ago. I say it was several years ago, almost 10 years ago. But while we were there, I mean, it was so interesting. We went there. And I guess I don't think anybody listens to this show that would even know who I'm talking about. So I'm gonna traipse this real carefully, but this has a point. There was one lady who went with us who was a very obese lady, and we went there, and she was literally considered to be a goddess. She got proposed to like five or six men. One of them being one of the most wealthy men in the town. She got proposed to. And at the time, we didn't actually realize it, but they were giving her these adorned bracelets. And we just said, "Oh, hey, how sweet is that?" And every time we would get done, he was a guy who was native from Tanzania, and he went to our church, and he would walk over, and he'd look at us, and he'd be like, "You do realize that he just proposed to you." She was like, "What?"
So the perception of beauty was in that culture was not connected to what we have as a society deemed beautiful, which is, you know, waif thin and about to blow away.
There you go. And I think that's so good. And I think we need to be taught to look for those things. And I even think that this is something I'm kind of stepping out of the body image thing for just a minute. But I'm even moving this into other parts, other ways that we view personalities. It's easy to look at a personality that doesn't jive exactly with ours and say, "Oh, look at that. They're a this. They're a turd. They're a jerk. They're defiant." Mm-hmm. But learning how to shift that mentality and find beauty in the diversity of people, even that person who seems to be just insolent, and they don't care about anybody else's feelings. If you look at it, you can also say this is that person who doesn't take junk from people and are willing to stand up against something that is, you know, we can do that in our kids too when it comes to those kids that are defiant. These are also the kids that if they want to, they'll resist drugs because they're good at it, you know.
Absolutely.
And so I think there's some levels of that that we need to do. Now, I'm not saying that you need to objectify and beautify or something like that unhealthiness. I'm not saying that you do that. We're not saying that you go easy on the fact that often, and I'm speaking as a guy who, even though my microphone has me sitting about, you know, 3 or 4 inches away from the table, my belly is still touching the table. So this is coming as a guy, you know, who's there saying this, but you know, we don't need to objectify it, but there is that point that we look for the beauty in people and see people as being different and nurturing this idea that being different is beautiful. It is a wonderful thing.
Well, and this all goes back to how we language things with our kids and being able to help them have a different mindset so that they don't have to be locked into only what's on the surface, only what they can see with their eyes, but also what they can feel with their hearts, what they can understand about relationship. And diversity really is beauty. And so teaching them to appreciate diversity is one step in that we can gift them, if you think about it that way, in this process of teaching them how to think of what is beautiful and what's good.
Yeah.
Number six is pretty simple. It says, I'm sorry, I skipped number five. Number five says, avoid making physical activity about size or based on what you ate. Have you ever heard somebody say something like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to exercise for 30 minutes just to work off, you know, the 10 M&Ms I ate.
Yeah.
When we do that, what we're doing is we're linking in our kids' minds that physical activity is a chore. It's something that's undesirable. When in actuality, physical activity is very, very good for us, and it should be something that's joyous. We ought to enjoy the endorphins that are released when we have a great workout. We ought to enjoy being able to work out a little bit of a sweat because it energizes us and makes us feel alive, you know? And so when we linguistically connect physical activity with something really negative, once again, we're setting our kids up to think that way and to fall into those thought patterns.
You know, I was talking with my brother-in-law the other day, and he's a physical trainer, and I mean, the dude is stacked like a set of books. I mean, he is just cut. And so when he and I were talking about this the other day, and one of the things that he mentioned, this was actually one of his suggestions, was he said, really, we've got to take, you know, exercise and shift it from the negative thing that it is to being the positive thing. You said it's about shifting, again, that mentality, that status quo that we're taught that, you know, the exercise is what you go do, the punishment that you go do to make up for the fun, enjoyable thing that you did. And he said, you got to shift it to being the exercise is the fun, enjoyable thing that you go and do. And I'd read a story a while back about Tiger Woods. And regardless of what you think about the guy as a man, I mean, he's an amazing golf player. And one of the things that his dad mentioned that he would do was he would reward Tiger with golf for everything that he did. So if he did really good, we get to go play golf today. And then, of course, Tiger's thinking, yeah, we get to go play, you know, we get to go play golf. This is great. And so it became the pleasurable activity. And so learning how to shift that around. And so I was discussing this with my brother-in-law. He said, you know, we got to shift our kids' mentalities to start thinking this way. And, you know, we got to talking about it. And I started saying, it got me thinking, in reality, at least with my children, I'll put it that way, with my sample size being my three kids that are active at this point, that are walking, right? I have found that I think it's actually our mentalities that I think they start out that way. I think they start out as seeing exercise being the wonderful good thing because right now the kids are like, yeah, let's go on a walk. And then we go walk like, Dad, I'll race you to the next stop sign. And then, Dad, let's jog all the way to the rest of the house. You know, and that's fun for them. Now,
As adults, sometimes we kind of put the kibosh on that because we don't want to engage in the physical activity?
That's exactly what I think it is. I think because we've learned that mentality through whatever it is. We've adopted that, and then as they grow, we begin to teach them that mentality that it's, oh, God, I've got to get up and go do my workout this morning, you know. And so a lot of it really, I think, is changing ourselves so that way our kids don't pick up on our junky habits.
I agree with you. I do, absolutely. And that's where it begins. Maybe this is something that we need to chalk up in the column of things we need to relearn from our kids.
Yes, you know? That's good. That's really good. All right, so moving on to number six here. I think I actually really like this one. It says, and again, this goes back to that mentality that we're talking about. It says, do not label foods as good or bad. So I think what we're running into, Jeff, is that we're confusing this mentality of good food versus bad food, you know, with kind of this mentality of that there's food that's good for us, that's healthy, that's nutritional, versus those that are pleasurable.
Right.
And so when we're mixing those things up, I think it creates this kind of illusion, and it's confusing for kids, I think, because We're telling them that this is bad food, right? That hamburger is a bad food, or that ice cream is a bad food, or chicken. Well, McDonald's chicken nuggets. I'm not even going to go there. But we're saying these things are bad food, and yet they invoke pleasure. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, sure. I mean, it feels good to eat those, and I think it creates this confusing dichotomy for kids where they're pulled back and forth, and they don't know what to do.
All right, it's mixed signals that we're sending to our kids, and you know, once again, this goes back to several of the other of the points that we've mentioned, where how we language things and how we teach our kids to think about it. There's probably a better way to do it. Instead of labeling the foods as good or bad, we really need to be focusing more on what's healthy and what's not healthy. Because even stuff that is healthy for us doesn't give us everything that we need for good health. And so we can eat a lot of good food without it necessarily being healthy for us. I mean, I could eat, what's something that's healthy? I can eat bananas. Bananas are a wonderful fruit because they've got all sorts of good nutrients and stuff in them. But if I'm only eating bananas, then I'm not getting everything I need. And so we really need to be helping our kids understand that when it comes to eating, it's a matter of healthiness.
Yeah. Lentils have a lot of really good added bonuses in the minerals that they come with, right? But I don't want to sell my kid on eating lentils for the rest of their life. I mean, let's be honest. It's okay to eat some of the pleasurable stuff. Again, it goes back to that word you said a minute ago. It's moderation and temperance.
Yes. Number 7 does kind of the same thing. It says offer a variety of food and model moderate indulgence and a wide consumption of foods, because eating should be joyful. And I can't tell you how much I agree with that one. Eating should be a pleasurable experience.
Yeah.
And it's not just the nutritional aspect of eating. There is a relational aspect of eating.
Oh,
in
absolutely.
Many cultures, breaking bread is akin to having a relationship. That you can't be a friend, you can't know somebody until you dined with them, until you've broken bread.
Yeah,
and even in our culture, sitting down to eat around the table should be something that is not only healthy for our bodies, but also healthy for our spirits. And so eating should be a joyful experience.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Jeff, I'm thinking that knowing the way you and I talk,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to trim this because there's 15 of these and we're passionate about this. And so I'm thinking we're going to have to trim this off. So I'm thinking maybe one more a piece. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think we can probably run through the last couple of them here because we're on number 8 and
right.
these last ones kind of go together. Number 8 says, don't make your kids eat if they say they aren't hungry.
Yes.
Number 9 says, don't deny your kids food if they say they are hungry.
See, I like those.
Those are kind of two sides of the same coin. That it shouldn't – eating food should not be a power and control issue between parents. If your kids say you aren't hungry, don't make them finish everything that's on their plate. That's a power and control issue, not a food issue, not a health issue, you know. It's better to give them the opportunity to learn to trust when their stomach tells them they're full. Stop eating, all right? And the same thing is if your kids are saying that they are hungry, it would be better for us as parents to have a pantry that is full of healthy things for them to eat. So if they want to go snacking, that they're not filling up on empty calories and carbohydrates and things like that. If we have healthy foods for our kids to snack on, well, you know, then we won't have to say no, you can't have it because it'll spoil your appetite.
Yeah, that's
we can
good.
Say yes, you can have it because it's good for you, right?
Yeah, I had a mom years ago. She said, Trey, all he ever eats is potato chips and ice cream. And, you know, mind you, he was like an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid. And, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of the things that were going on emotionally and relationally between this kiddo, but I'm like, who's buying the food?
Right. Says,
well, I am. So you're telling me you're keeping this food in there, and then you can't figure out why a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kid is eating it all the time. And you know, and I said it much more caringly than that. But
right.
It was a real revelation for her. We keep it in the house.
Mm-hmm. It's surprising to know how much that we take for granted as adults, but it sets our kids up to be really confused about it. It's like, well, you're the one that bought it, right? So
I was reading number 10, and tell me what you think about this, because I think I agree with half of this one, but not the other half. It says, never comment on the amount, too little or too much, that your kids eat. See, I agree with half of it. I mean, mm-hmm. I agree with not making a big deal if our kids seem to eat too little, especially for me. As I'm relearning what the process and the nature of food is, I'm mm-hmm. learning that if my kids don't eat a whole lot, just Don't fuss with them about it. They're going to eat just a little bit, and they're going to be okay. I mean, we watch our kids. We know what baseline is. We know what normal is. And if they ever started acting interesting or funny or getting sick all the time, we would know that maybe there's something nutritionally
sure.
that's an issue. So we don't fuss about that. But not doing it too much. What do you think about that one?
I think that this one may be born out of a concern for how our kids interpret or how they receive our comments. One thing that comes out a lot in therapy is that without meaning to, parents really come across as hypercritical because we think that we're just making observations, but our children often process them as judgments about them.
Yeah.
And so when we're commenting on how much they're eating or how little they're eating, they may take it as us questioning their judgment or their desire or their passion or I don't know. I don't know that you should never comment on it. I think that we need to be aware of what we're saying to our kids, and also aware, if we know our kids well enough, we should be able to have a conversation with them about how they're feeling about things. And so we can, I don't know. This is one that I think you can use your discernment and wisdom as a parent on what you say about how much your kids eat.
Yeah, I think if I were going to work with this one, I would change it a little bit to say, don't shame your kids.
There you go.
For doing one or the other. If it's a, gosh, you eat so much and that is not good. If it's a me, if you could say it and put a hand gesture to it, if it was you pointing at them and waggling your finger, mm-hmm. I agree. That's not the right way to do it. However, I see a value in talking to kids about when it's too much. What does your body feel like when it's too full? See, I never got that. And mm-hmm. so now I'm having to go relearn all this stuff that most kids get taught when they're young. On sure. my own as a full-grown adult, and I think there's a value in doing that. Again, I think that's the heart of this author. I think she's got a good right. heart, and it does come down to that. Not about shaming, but it is about educating.
So how about this next one? Never use food as a reward, incentive, or punishment. I'm not sure exactly how to take this because, there are times where for after school or for on a special thing, special day, I'll take my kids and we'll go out and we'll get some frozen yogurt.
Yeah,
or, we might have a morning where instead of, having toast or waffles or something in the morning that if we can get our act together in the morning, get out the door fast enough, we might have a special breakfast day where we go to Jack and Jill's and get a donut for breakfast. And that's a special time. So, I don't know about never using food as a reward instead of a punishment. I can see that it is something that's abused. Well, if you don't finish your dinner, you won't get any dessert.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, that's setting up expectations. And once again, I think that's turning food into a power and control struggle between parents and kids. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, too. I was thinking at first, my first thought when I read this earlier today, I thought, okay, how do you punish a kid with food? But it makes sense. You're going to eat your vegetables.
Right.
You're going to eat those. And I think this is getting a little outside here, but I think it is important to figure out certain kids have certain tastes and mm-hmm. certain things that they like and they don't like. Now, sometimes kids are just being resistant. They don't want to eat their veggies because they'd really focus on all their mac and cheese or something like that. I think it's good to know personalities. There are just certain things that my older daughter does not like. She does not like jelly. And all the other kids will eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but she just wants peanut butter. And I don't have a problem necessarily with tailoring to those kinds of things. But mm-hmm. I do agree with that. I'm making peanut butter and jelly, so you're going to eat the jelly too. Punishment I agree with. I think that's good. But I'm kind of with you. I think we can use it as a reward. I do think it is, like the author said, abused. I think we use it for almost everything, all reinforcement for some families. And I admit ours was this way up until about 6 to 8 months ago. Mm-hmm. Every reinforcement fell back to food. And we've been learning how to move out of that and find everything to incentivize, good behavior with and whatnot. So I get what she's saying. I think it is the majority. But again, I'm like you. Anytime somebody throws words like never and always and those kinds of things, I get a little nervous.
All right. I do like how she phrases the next one, number 12. It says, guard your children against negative body image.
Ooh, yeah, I'm big on this one.
There's so much out there, and we've already mentioned this because she references it earlier in this blog post that there's so much out there in the media that gives us false reality. It's not the truth of the matter, but it's trying to set up an ideal that is unreachable for most people when it comes to body image, what we ought to look like. But once again, even in her comments here, the author kind of writes, she says, stop your subscriptions to women's magazines. Don't watch The Biggest Loser. Toddlers and Tiaras focuses on appearance. And there's any variety of shows promoting appearance as a route to happiness. I don't know that you can completely avoid everything unless you're just willing to shut yourself off from media altogether. So I like the idea of guarding your children against negative body image media, but I also like the idea of being able to use those things as teachable moments, you know, as launching points for having good, healthy discussions about what positive body image is and what healthiness is with your kids. So I think guarding your children doesn't necessarily mean that you have to stop your subscription to something or not watching something necessarily.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on the full list. I do agree with trying to moderate some of it if you can, but I think that word and that mentality kind of gets a little overdone, just a little bit, because I think there's a value in allowing your kids to see some exposure to that and then processing that. I'm sorry, I'm going back to my therapy speak, but you know, talking that out with them and letting them say, "What do you think about this? What do you think about this? You know, 6-year-old girl, you know, up there in bikinis and whatnot. I mean, thinking about that toddler's tiaras and whatnot, and getting them thinking about that and getting them establishing their belief systems about modesty. And I mean, a lot of times when we think of the word like body image and modesty, right? Mm-hmm. When do we talk to our kids about that? Well, when they're 12, 13, 14, right. 15, 16 is when that becomes real popular. Well, why not start getting them thinking about it when they're 4, 5, 6, 7? And I mean, obviously there's some issues with certain kids will understand the vernacular sooner than others and whatnot, but I think it's valuable to have some level of exposure and then talking to them about it. What do we believe in our family? Well, we believe this. We believe that you care about everybody and that you can respect everyone, but in our family, here's what we do. And I think it's kind of valuable to do that.
You know, it's interesting, Trey, no matter how we get to it, it feels like in almost every podcast that we do, it all comes back to having a relationship with your kid and being able to talk about it. And so I just like to point out that this is just, you know, it's systemic thinking. And no matter what we're talking about, it comes back to being able to connect with your kids, being able to model for your kids, being able to be in relationship with your kids so that you can give them what they need in order to grow and be healthy. So, and that's really what the last couple of these talk about. Number 13 says, avoid talking about a nutritionalist approach to food, or, you know, taking a certain food and turning it into just fats, carbs, and calories. Now, there are some times where you're going to have to do that with your kids. In my family, we count carbs all the time because we have to for diabetes and for our diabetes management. But at the same time, we don't want to obsess over, you know, every time we go to the store looking at the calories or the fat or the carb content. You know, we want to be able to see food as once again, a pleasurable experience, not something we have to analyze and break down into numbers.
Now, I think that's good because I've seen a lot of folks that even young kids that will get so obsessive over these things. And a lot of times it ties back into that good and bad thing. So then what happens is that you get into the certain diets and whatnot, the Key West diet or the no carb diet and whatnot. And I mean, exactly. And I think it gets kids self-conscious. And I even think in a lot of ways I see it creating kids almost a sense of guilt. Whenever they do partake in these things, because it's hard to eliminate any one thing from the diet. I mean, if you take a look at what most kids have to eat at the cafeteria at schools and whatnot, I mean, it's almost impossible because every one hard. Item of food seems to have every one of those things in each one of it. So I like this approach that you know, that my wife is a major follower of Weight Watchers over the last 3 or 4 months now, and I'm really fond of their system because it really de-emphasizes a lot of this let's dissect our foods and moves into here's how many points you have. Really, in reality, it makes a more manageable number to understand how many calories you should get per day in terms of intake and output. And it just helps you stick to those. And I like that approach because, again, it doesn't say don't eat these things. It just says, hey, you can eat whatever you want, but you've got to stay underneath this. Yeah, be smart and keep your number underneath this. And I think that is brilliant.
So number 14 here, getting close to the end, talks about encouraging alternative means of self-esteem besides appearance. Things like finding value in our spirituality, in our values, in our beliefs. And you mentioned it before, you know, praising our kids' effort, instead of praising the results that they're getting. And I think that this is a great point, which, like I said, you already kind of made. But it's important for our kids to be able to value how they look, but also value who they are and discovering who they are through their spirituality and values and their connections and their relationships is a much better way to value yourself than simply by your appearance.
You know, this is one of the ones that it comes pretty easy to me, but I've spent the most time having to relearn my mentality on all this, especially with, you know, focusing on, I call this motivational focus, right? So instead of focusing on the action of anything my kid does, focusing on what was the motivation behind it. Because we have certain rules in this household that we believe in and we stick to, we adhere to, if you will. But in reality, some of those things that kids can do that might violate one of those rules, when you really stop and look at the motivation behind it, you know, you can see you can see that it wasn't intended to be hurtful or vindictive or spiteful or any of those kinds of things. And it was just kind of a – it was a bad idea, but the right place to come from it with. And so I like this. I like this idea here of encouraging those things, because when you can find those things, when you can start looking at the motivation of why your kid's doing things, it allows you to start reinforcing something that is way more important, because kids can fake good behavior. I mean, we all can. And so what we're really wanting to reinforce with kids is, why did you do it? Not what did you do, but why did you do it? And so, I think this is a beautiful one too, even when it comes to food, because kids are going to make decisions. They're going to make choices. Maybe they're not the best ones, but we need to look at their motivations behind them and help encourage those motivations, right? So it's not a big deal that they stopped eating and didn't eat all their food. Maybe they needed to eat all of it. Maybe there was a nutritional need there that they needed all of it. But if they did it because their body was full, that's what we need to be focusing on. Not the action nearly – I mean, that's to be praised as well, but focusing on what was the motivation behind them. I love that one.
Well, let's round it out with this this last one, number 15 here, and kind of close things down. The author of this blog puts volunteering on here, and at first glance, it almost kind of doesn't fit. You look at it, you're like, wait, where are they coming from? A volunteer? But it, once you think about it, it really makes a whole lot of sense, because the whole body image issue is basically a matter of getting stuck on the outward appearances. And there's something that happens when you volunteer, and it doesn't matter what you're doing volunteering, whether it's helping out an animal shelter or you know, reading at the library or you know, handing out at the homeless shelter. Volunteering means you have to think beyond yourself. And thinking beyond yourself means that you have to focus on something deeper than just what you see. If you're looking at others and the circumstances, it is harder to think of something so superficial as your appearance and what you look like outwardly when you are forcing yourself to focus on others. And it really is very rewarding. So it's a, I like that she rounds it out by asking us to think outside of ourselves and teaching our kids to do the same thing.
You know, I think this also has a value in the sense of it's, and you kind of, you skimmed on this a minute ago pretty insightfully, but it's moving away from thinking about ourselves. You know, preoccupation with the self. Don't get me wrong. I think we need to take care of ourselves. We need to do the best we can to look sharp and feel, because that creates within us good feelings. I mean, it feels good to feel good. It feels good when I feel like I look sharp and I'm put together and whatnot. And I mean, that's a nice feeling. But, you know, in a lot of cases, preoccupation with the self is exactly that. It's a focus in, you know, on me. It's a focus on what I look like, how I want to look. This is such a good one, and I would never have – I mean, this is really insightful on this author's part because, one of the best things that you can do is – I mean, try to develop that healthy sense of ourself, but let's turn our focus on others. Let's turn our focus on others because, again, you know, I've told you, you know, earlier, Jeff, that our mentality in our household is very much of beauty is not linked to the – physical condition of what we look like, right? Beauty is what's inside. I mean, forgive the cliche here, but what's in the heart? And again, in our family system and the way we believe with this, doing things like volunteering is accessing those things that genuinely make you beautiful. So this is offering another context that I had never considered when it comes to our mentality on beauty and what is it. That's exactly right. At least it fits our ethos to a T here. Get the emphasis off of ourselves. Go do those things with the right heart. Go do those things with the right motivation, and it helps engender that beauty that how we define it in our family that we're wanting.
Trey, if it's okay with you, I want to round things out by going back to the story I started out with about Eleanor telling me that she felt like she was fat and ugly. Because I tried to incorporate in my own kind of therapeutic way a lot of the things that that are talked about in this blog post, these 15 different ways. The two things that I ended up saying to her, I think that that have really stuck with me, and I've actually kind of mulled them over and I've used them in other contexts, was exactly these two things. One, trying to take her focus on fat as a good or a bad thing, because once again, we had some of that stinking thinking going on, so I wasn't going to be able to logically explain to her one way or the other, but I wanted her to be able to challenge her own thoughts. So I instead of directly challenging her and telling her she was wrong for thinking that, I just suggested that maybe instead of being focused on whether or not she was fat or not, we should just be concerned with whether she's healthy. Just if she is healthy, it doesn't matter what she looks like, because being healthy is the important part.
Yeah.
And as long as we're eating and exercising, we're not going to focus so much on how big we are, how small we are, but really kind of took it back out of that value laden, good, bad, you know, fat, thin talk, and planted the seed, for her to consider whether or not she's healthy. And if she feels healthy, she can feel good about herself. Right. And the other thing goes to what we closed out with here, as far as thinking outside yourself. I said, now, Eleanor, I can understand that there are some times that you might think badly about yourself, but I'm wondering if your best friend was here and she was saying that she was fat and that she was ugly and she was stupid, what would you tell her? She said, well, I would tell her that she's not, because my friend, I said, okay, all right. So you wouldn't like it for your friend to describe themselves in a way that was, one, you know, you could look at them and you could tell that it's not true, but two, it's a mean way to think of themselves. You would tell them that they shouldn't feel that way. She said, well, yeah. I said, okay, well, how about when we think about ourselves, we need to be at least as nice to ourselves as we would be to our friends.
Man, that's good.
And, you know, I think that that gets at thinking beyond yourself. You know, if I take it out of how I think about myself, because we're very willing to be very mean to ourselves in our own inner thoughts.
Yeah.
But whereas we wouldn't do it to other people. And so if we can be at least as nice to ourselves as we would be to somebody else, to a friend of ours, a loved one, or even a stranger, then maybe we can moderate some of that stinking thinking that we do when we start doing that negative self-talk. So anyhow, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this. This is some great stuff, and to share it with our listeners. You know, as always, we love being able to share things that will help you grow your families, to take our education, our experience, and have them collide in a way that produces positive reactions in our families, and to share those things with our listeners. So thanks for tuning in. And you know, as always, we encourage feedback. Trey's got this great website built with the Family Podcast Network that has all sorts of ways to contact us, whether you want to leave a voicemail, whether you want to send us a message via email, or leave a comment. But we crave your feedback, and we want that stuff coming our way so that we know what you want us to talk about, and give us an opportunity to respond to that stuff. So we just encourage you to send that stuff our way so that we can be putting together another show for you next week.
We'll see you guys next week.